Hello and welcome to the Faith and Works podcast, brought to you by the Interfaith Leadership Council of Detroit. The goal of this group is to bring together, encourage, and nurture interfaith groups and networks to support conciliation between and among religious groups, as well as the community at large, through active conflict resolution and to promote interfaith education so that the metropolitan Detroit community can benefit from the synergies and creative benefits that knowledge and understanding can provide. My name is Maddie Sosa, and I will be this episode's host. We have three guests with us today. Robert Patel is currently the vice chair of the Interfaith Leadership Council. He is an adjunct professor at University of Detroit Mercy, where he teaches history in the Religious Studies Department. The courses he teaches focus on American pluralism and America's social ethics. Welcome, Bob.
Good morning, Maddie.
Our next guest is Saeed Khan. When he's not at Wayne State University, where he's senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies and Global Studies, Saeed Khan is usually on some plane heading to some time zone, researching how religion interacts with the modern world and how the modern world affects religion. Welcome, Saeed.
Thanks for having me.
And our final guest is Reverend Robert Jones. Robert Jones is an award-winning roots musician and storyteller and has served as the pastor of the Sweet Kingdom Missionary Baptist Church of Detroit, Michigan for over 16 years. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So glad to have you all here.
It's great to be here.
So to start things off, I wanted to give each of you a chance to talk a little bit about what you think this podcast has to offer and why you wanted to be a part of this particular project. And maybe we'll start with Bob.
Well, thanks, Maddie. This podcast has a long time in being born, and this morning becomes the first time that we're able to actually try to put some things out there that we've been thinking about for a long time. The idea of faith and works has a long history in the idea of religion itself. It certainly probably even was introduced before the Reformation, but it's certainly been around for 500 years. And we want to advance that idea in the current period, where we think that both faith and the idea of what comes from faith are being questioned by a lot of people. And we think that there's something to be said for a robust discussion that deals with questions that religion has always been concerned with, but for some reason during our time, people are saying that religion may be irrelevant. And for many people, especially in America, where religion has been the way Americans think, as a matter of fact, American intellectual thought and American religious thought are possibly indistinguishable, although in our current time, maybe people are trying to distinguish them more than they did in the past. But religion is becoming something different, and it always has been becoming something different in America. And so we want to explore that question about what religion is becoming. It's always in some sort of transition that is, to those who are adherents of particular religions, may look like religion is dying. That has not ever been the case in America, and it is my assumption that it's not the case now, though we may be looking at religion in the future that looks quite different than what it has in the past. So here we are at another sort of inflection point where people are saying that religion is becoming less of something and there's less participation in what we would call the mainline religions. We have lots of religious identity that comes from the immigration that's been very prevalent since 1965 and the new immigration laws that were put into effect in 1965. And so that's the purpose of this exploration, will be to look at what religion is becoming, how it relates to the current society, and what we might learn from that transition that we believe it's in the midst of.
Great. As you can tell, there's going to be a lot of great episodes. We've got a lot of meat for this. All right, Saeed, would you like to talk a little bit about why you want to be involved in this podcast and what you feel it has to offer?
Well, I think first of all, I want to be involved because of the people who are involved. I've known Bob for several years, and in many ways, I think the podcast will probably be a platform for conversations that we've been having for all of those years, and looking forward to having the good Reverend on and in those conversations as well. I mean, to me, I always take a look as a historian on the role of religion and what it has meant for shaping societies. And I think for a long time, religion has been what has regulated and dictated societies. Now it seems as though the tables are turned, and it seems as though society is now dictating and regulating what are the parameters of religion. I mean, we're looking at religion now through terms like market share, monetization, valuation of religion.
Not to mention social media as well.
And social media, and the irony of us using a podcast to talk about these things is not lost. But how then are we reaching the intended goal of religion, which is to create functional society? Is it about societies becoming less functional? And if that's the case, do we point to religion as being the cause of that? And if religion isn't the cause, what is the cause of that? And equally importantly, that can a dysfunctional society then have a harmful effect on religion? So these kinds of interactions fascinate me. It's one of the reasons that when I travel, I'm always keen to see how that dynamic is working somewhere else. But there's no place to really start that's better than the local. And so here in the Metro Detroit area, I think we have a really vibrant religious community scene. How the interactions then affect religion and society, both in an explicit way, but also perhaps more interestingly in the implicit ways.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Reverend Jones, how about for you?
Well, certainly Bob and Saeed have said a great deal, and I'm excited about the possibility of discussions with these two as well as with others as we continue in this podcast. But I think what really interests me is the fact that religion at various times, and I speak, you know, I can speak primarily to the idea of Christianity and Christianity in the African-American tradition, has been this powerful entity that brings about social change, that allows people to collectively fight for principles of justice, to pull together to build schools and hospitals and really affect change, to fight discrimination, segregation, in the society that we live in. Dr. King was a preacher. Dred Scott was a preacher. So I wonder about a time where now the church seems to be losing its steam, its vitality, and its focus. So that, you know, why is the church not the same radical and transformative entity that it has always been? You know, when you read the New Testament, folks talk about the word as being something that is really revolutionary and in a sense dangerous, right? So as we become seemingly more complacent with our religious backgrounds, we also see an uptake on this idea that I am not my brother's keeper. We see mass shootings. We see, this sort of runaway hedonism or individuality, not in the sense of being individually expressive, but in the sense of just I'm doing my own thing to the exclusion of your thing. And there are no consequences either here or in the future to my actions because I'm allowed to do and be whatever I want to be. So I'm interested in seeing how we got there, and maybe more importantly, how do we get back?
That's great. Yeah. And I think that's a big theme for us, is going to be talking about, for future episodes, talking about the past, talking about the present, and talking for the future of the religion in American culture. And so I wanted to open that up kind of for a discussion for us now, talking about what do we feel like is the role of religion in American culture today, in our present day landscape?
Well, I think that religion's role today is the same as it always has been. It hasn't really changed. What's changing is some of the context in which religion operates. There has always been syncretism in religion. That is the idea that when you have all of these different cultural religious identities bumping up against one another, they influence each other and they form one another. And so that's actually one of the things that we want to explore and to explore here is what is happening with that syncretism today? What's being informed by that? Just to give you an idea of a simple way to understand syncretism and religion is to say that when Hindus or Sikhs or Muslims were in the parts of the world where those religions were very prevalent before they came to the United States, they had no need for Sunday school. And so they then come into the United States where the Protestant religions have had Sunday school forever. And lo and behold, they seem to need Sunday school. Hmm. And not only do they need Sunday school, but their kids then come to Sunday school and they don't eat their traditional foods. They eat pizza and donuts, right? That's syncretism. That's what's – so you can take that onto, you know, away from donuts and take it into the – social media platforms that are so available. And so those are influencing religion. So there's a context now where religious identities, religious traditions are then being both assessed by the context that they're living in, and they're also assessing that context. They're saying this is good about that and this is not good about it. Those of us, anyone who's ever talked to an immigrant, first-generation immigrant for any length of time, will almost invariably tell you that America lacks the sense of family that they have within their own religious context, right? They feel strongly that they are introducing to America an idea of family that's missing. And of course, part of that is not just that they're introducing an idea, but there's also a need for strong family networks for people who are new and who do not have an extended network that is, you know, has been created over the years of just their, you know, presence in this country. So I think that what religions are doing is, to go back to that, circle back to it, is that they are creating and assessing social ethics. I sometimes call them an incubator. Religious groups are an incubator of social ethics. They take the context that they have always existed in, and then they assess the context that's current and make some judgments about it. It would be an interesting podcast episode to talk about how would you define religion in general. Mm-hmm. But one of the definitions that I use, which is the one that fits with our works concept very readily, is that religious groups are live arguments for how we should live together. Another way of putting that is that they are dynamic ways that we discuss what should or should not happen in our social context. So I think that's what religion is doing today, and I think that that's one of the things we want to talk about is what that context is and what that looks like.
There's a lot to chew on there. Being a fairly recent immigrant to the United States, i.e., actually being conscious of my migration, some 44 years ago, interestingly enough, from England. There's a couple things that, as I get older, I realize about not only on a personal level, but also on a historical level, what religion means in the United States or in the American context. I don't think there's a single person in this country, irrespective of their religious tradition, that doesn't have, and I'll borrow from Harry Potter here, a Protestant Horcrux. There's a Protestantization. I mean, Bob, when you're talking about even an Islamic Sunday school or a Hindu Sunday school, that is having then on an implicit level a Protestantization of Islam or Hinduism, whether they realize it or not. But along with that, it's also having a corporatization of religions. And I think America is really unique in that sense that it came together. First of all, it was born of dislocation. People came to this country dislocated from their other origins. And perhaps that's why, as you said before, the country maybe lacks a sense of family.
Mm.
You had, before the Protestant Reformation, you had one in Christianity, only one game in town, which was the church. And Luther comes around in 1517. In America, they always talk about Teddy Roosevelt being the great antitrust president. Well, I think that the first trust buster was Martin Luther, who breaks the monopoly of the Catholic Church and the kind of deregulation that happens with Protestantism carries over to become sort of the central ethos for the United States and has shaped everything since. At the same time, it is impossible to be in the United States without recognizing what is the impact of the corporate model on all religions.
Mm.
And so I'll give you an example. If a Muslim community wants to put up a mosque or an Islamic school, the first thing they may do is pray, but they are not going to pray in a facility that they don't have yet. The very first thing that they do is they file their articles of incorporation. They then get here in Michigan a 38-dash number, which they then take and open up a bank account. They then go for the all hallowed, pun intended, 501c3 tax exempt nonprofit status with the IRS. Now, in order to do all that, you have to file bylaws. Mm-hmm. You have to go ahead and file a constitution. Mm-hmm. You have to list your board of directors. You are corporatizing everything before you've probably even bought the land and lay down a single brick. Now, whether people realize it, that means that all of these religions are getting shoehorned through the gauntlet of a corporate model. So that's going to invariably affect not only their religions, the practice of their religions, religious authority. Is it the board or is it the religious leader? It's going to affect their identity. And I think that it's important that when we see how religion, as you said before, Bob, as it's going to then affect and shape society, we have to be very conscious of the fact that it is a corporatized model of religion that then is affecting society. And as a result of that, identity, the interaction, the disillusionment that sometimes people have with their religious traditions when it just seems to be too either mechanical or too paperwork oriented. These are all important topics that I think it's important for us to then see as we move forward and as we're trying to see how does religion occupy a space within somebody's life. Is it a central spot? Is it coming to a religion as a penitent? Or is it coming to a religion as a consumer? I think these are all really important.
Yeah. Sorry, Reverend Jones, were you about to?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at something that is very much like Saeed said, something that is organizational and corporate. At the same time, you're looking at something that's deeply personal and spiritual, whether you use a big S or a small S. You know, the church is where you find solace. The church is where you find healing. The church is often composed of some pretty broken souls. And My pastor used to say, you know, that's the only organization that you can come drunk, cripple, and crazy, and they're glad to see you, right? So, I mean, the church is that. And if you look at a model that says, you know, we're going to choose the best leaders, the most efficient people, the most organized people, that works everywhere, almost except in the church. We look at the idea of giftedness. We look at the idea of people who are growing within this organization and being, in a sense, shaped by the relationship that they have with the church and then with God, as you see God to be. I'm sort of always struck historically. I mean, I'm a roots musician, so I will hear a hymn that's born in slavery. And the idea being that at the same time that that hymn was being sung by an African-American, a version of that song was being sung by the one who had him enslaved or her enslaved. At the same time, you have the Great Enlightenment and you have all these preachers coming from the North to talk about what will ultimately become a theology that says all men are created equal. You have preachers from the South saying the status quo is fine and God is pleased with slavery. So you have these conflicting messages all the time. And the question becomes, what is the truth? And how do you find the truth? And then, as Saida said, once you get the truth, what do you do with it? Do you sit there and be complacent with things as they are? Do you march? Do you protest? Do you get together and say, our corporation stands boldly for this or against that? And then you, of course, face the risk of losing corporate members. And then you gain corporate members. All of those things, I think, are the things that make the church really unique. It makes it attractive and it makes it frightening at the same time. The fact is that when the Ku Klux Klan would string up someone, they would have a prayer meeting right before because somebody thought he was doing God's will, which is amazing, but it's true, right? The images we find in Birth of a Nation are images that people are exposed to that they've got to put things back right so that God will be pleased. We must make America great again. Well, when did America cease to be great? And we start to ask those questions. And I have friends and acquaintances who have left the church that they belong to for years because of the political stance of that church in relation to the current day politics. And then again, on the other end of the spectrum, you have folks like Dr. King, Dr. Abernathy, and so many other countless leaders in the Black church who, in a sense, radicalized the mission and the purpose of the church to bring about rights that I enjoy right now. But, you know, now we have a church that in a lot of places that church is largely involved in the idea, okay, we have overcome. So now let's sit down and enjoy the fruits of our victory while there are folks who have not overcome. And we look at folks who are coming into this country with the same jaundiced eye that folks may have looked at us 60 years ago. Or one of the things my pastor used to say is that in every group, you have three groups. You have three churches in every church. You have us, you have y'all, and you have them. And we are better than y'all, but both of us are better than them. And the us, the y'all, and the them always, of course, changes depending on who's doing the talking, right? So we have that going on right now. we can communicate with each other because at least we are better than them. But they feel the same way in their circle. And we've got to have some conversation that, that sort of delves into that and lets us understand one another on a spiritual basis as well as on a corporate basis.
So, Robert, what you say there reminds me that one of the things we want to do with this podcast is to not treat religion as an absolute good, that religion has its serious conflicts, and it always has its serious conflicts because our values are in conflict. I mean, the one you brought up about the some preachers talking about all people being created equal by their creator, and others saying that the place that God had intended for certain people was to be enslaved. That's a contrast that's huge. But there are these constant tensions within religion, where religion serves all sorts of different purposes. For one thing, we all could point to certain religious groups and we'd say that if a person wants to more justify their wealth and their position in society and their status, they will belong to this particular religion. And
right.
That religion will be where they will reinforce their, their status or as a, their economic status. That other religion might be one where they reinforce their political status. And so we don't want to avoid the really difficult questions in this podcast where I think that where religion has become for some, especially in the kind of atheist movement that came about in the last 15 or 20 years, where some significant voices were raised about religion. But what those atheists were doing was treating religion as if it was a straw man of some sort, and that mm-hmm. they could define what it was. And for most of us who are deeply involved in religious practice of one kind or another, we don't recognize the form of religion that they have been saying that we espouse. We don't espouse those forms at all. Those are they seem childish to us, as a matter of fact. They don't seem real.
Well, I think one of the problems that happened is that, I mean, historically, religion would set the parameters for a society's morality. What I think people were caught off guard was that the morality of religion itself became questioned. And so once you start to question a basic premise, I mean, just to borrow from mathematics, when you have geometry, you are working on a proof. You have to start with certain givens. You start with certain presumptions, and you just accept those. Otherwise, there's no way that you can prove anything. Once you start to doubt, question, challenge, indict, and even refute those presumptions, then you are no longer on terra firma. And I think that this is one of the things that's happened with religion, is that its very morality is being questioned. And you then have these alternatives that are being provided, where the morality is then being defined, dictated, determined by atheism, now by popular culture, technology, globalization. All of these forces then are, even if they're not taking a direct pot shot at religion and challenging its morality, the very fact that they are now vying for that market share that we were talking about, an alternative form of or an alternative a moral compass, that then has caused religion to have to maybe shake off some cobwebs. And say, wow, we need to then go ahead and move beyond what we simply thought everybody inherently got and presumed. And as we see with technology, artificial intelligence, and other aspects coming through, the challenge on religion is, as it has been historically, the custodian of determining the moral compass, to have to now prove its relevance. I mean, this is sort of like the ball player who's the seasoned, salty veteran, who was never challenged, shows up at training camp every year and is assumed that, he's going to be the quarterback, for the season. And all of these young upstarts show up with new techniques of throwing, new techniques of nutrition, new techniques of conditioning. And now we find that the what was one time the blue chip and perhaps the only option for the quarterback is having to now go through and prove that not only should he start, but should still stay on the team.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I agree that what we're looking at is a time, is a place where the nexus of belief, technology, social change, wealth, all of those things are coming together to have us ask questions that we've never asked before. Let's take the idea of science, that science now allows us to, in a sense, create families in a way that we had never been able to create families before. The idea of a father and the mother, or the husband and the wife, or the male and the female being a necessary unit of some kind to produce a family is not necessarily in many people's minds a given anymore. So what do we do with that? And how do we deal with that? And I think the technology and the ability to produce these families is outstripping our social convention of how to deal with it. How do we deal with a family that has, you know, just pull it out, say pansexual parents? Who's the father? Who's the mother? Who's the responsible person? How does the genealogy run? Who is the inheritor and who is the beneficiary? We don't know these things because now we're able and accepting of things that would have gotten us kicked out of the tribe before. It's like, so those are issues. The issue that also I think comes into play is very much like Saeed's saying, how do we determine what is right and what is wrong? There is this kind of saying among folks of my children's generation, I do this, does it make me a bad person? What does that mean? Mm. You know, is a bad person someone who is critical and is willing to upset the apple cart or to rock the boat? Does that make you a bad person? Or is there a standard that we are required as humans to live up to that determines that I may not be good? Sometimes you have to be good. Sometimes it's more important to be righteous than to be good. And some of the people who have been trailblazers in terms of our setting the standard of morality have not been good, but they were righteous. To be good is to be, okay, I will follow the rules. Well, if the rules are wrong, then now you must be bad in order to be righteous, to be in keeping with what God is telling you. That's something that I think all of us wrestle with, you know? And I remember when Dr. King was killed, I was very small, but I do remember there were people in the black community, in the religious community, who viewed him as a troublemaker. And in a sense, although I'm sure they didn't celebrate his assassination, thought he was a thorn in the side and were kind of glad he was gone. Those same people now stand up and celebrate at the altar of Dr. King as if they were his biggest fans, and we marched arm in arm together when there were very relatively few people marching arm in arm with Dr. King when he was, you know, saying these provocative things and challenging the American ideal.
Well, see, it's about currency, isn't it? That now there's something profitable, whether it is cultural or political or economic, for being seen on Team King. Mm-hmm. And so then everybody wants a piece of the brand name, and they will go ahead and they'll wear it as a logo, or, you know, maybe get a headband with it, or
tattoo.
Tattoo. Yeah. And the idea of merchandising rights is massive. I mean, the fact that unfortunately, I think even Dr. King is subject to copyright laws. Shows then how the economics of so much of this drives how we then perceive people and how we define them as either being troublemakers, rabble-rousers, radicals, pariahs. But when the coast is clear, then people who have less temerity, less courage, they'll sort of come above ground and say, okay, now the coast is clear. Yeah, we were here the whole time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like jumping in the middle of a marathon, or, you know, 2 miles from the end, and act as though you were on the course the whole way.
Still getting that medal at the end.
Medals all around. So for me, one of the things that I find difficult to hear is religion being criticized as if it is only about hypocrisy, as if religious groups, as if any group of people have are immune to hypocrisy. And the reason I find that so difficult to hear is because religion is no more nor no less hypocritical than other places and other ways of being in society. But it also offers the thing over which we as religious people are hypocritical. That is, it offers a challenging set of social ethics that we recognize, and we recognize them as being difficult, and we come together to reinforce those values with those other, you know, with our co-religionists. We come together to discuss them and to be judged as to whether or not I am living up to those ethics. And so one of the things I want to explore as we do these podcasts is, where are those social ethics coming from? Where are those highest and best values going to come from if we abandon the current model of religion? And I assume what we'll find is that we have other venues that are going to look a lot like religion, that we're going to define as religion, and those are going to set those values for us. But I don't think we can live without them, and I don't think that that it's fair to just say the reason I don't participate in religion is because religious folks are hypocritical, as if they have some sort of a franchise for that.
Well, I think the word franchise, again, is an important one to use. I don't think, and as Robert was talking about, the change of the family structure away from what used to be seen as a traditional nuclear family, science and the dynamics of science have a lot to do with this. But I think that it's important to recognize that the erosion of the nuclear family predates what is seen as popular culture and science. It starts really with the Industrial Revolution, where extended families, which have been part of many traditional societies for a long time, have to reshuffle themselves. And certainly, given the migration of people and the dislocation involved to a place like the United States, that notion of tribalism, that notion of it taking a village to raise a child, was no longer as presumed of an option. But there's also this this idea, as you're talking about, from where do we derive our social ethics? A lot of that has to do with this public sphere, right? And how the public sphere has changed so much. So historically, it was the church that regulated the public sphere. And then, interestingly enough, after the religion wars of the 17th century and the aftermath of the Protestant Reformation, you find that it's the state, the nation state, which then starts to gear with the separation of church and state, the notions of social ethics. What is acceptable? You know, universal human rights, civil liberties, etc. Constitutions deciding these things as opposed to church scripture and doctrine. And now we're entering a different phase where really the public sphere is being regulated by the corporation. So, for somebody to be socially conscious, to be socially woke, it's a function of, which corporation seems to, espouse values that are in keeping with yourselves. Is a particular corporation sufficiently, LGBTQ, friendly? Is a particular, corporation sufficiently climate conscious? This is how people are now starting to mold their own quote unquote religions. Mm. These are the social ethics that are then starting to not only create the lens through which they see the world and in which they interact with society, but from which they then derive, and this is a word I think that we have to always get back to because, well, it's in the title, faith. How is it then that faith is reconstructed as a result of the social ethics being now coming not from a church and not from a nation state, but coming from maybe a combination of corporations?
Yeah. When we talk, though, about the corporation, in a sense, creating the ground rules of the society or creating the ideals of the society, we have to always remember that the corporation is about money. It's about the idea of producing a product that people will buy and buy into and feel good about buying into. So that's one of the reasons that we look with such scrutiny on a corporation, on a church, on any organization, about things that have nothing necessarily to do with their product, but it's the image. It's like, what is the overall overreaching philosophy of this corporation or this company? And I would submit that as long as you're sort of driven by something that is, in a sense, founded in money, then you're going to always be affected by that. You know, that is to go back to Jesus, you can't serve two masters, right? So the question becomes, how much are you going to give to mammon? Because sometimes the idea of doing the right thing is the idea of giving something away. I was just at a camp in an adult music camp, and this gentleman from Louisiana told this fairly long drawn out story, but it had to do with a chicken and a hog trying to negotiate a price for breakfast, and they end up finally going to a place where it's 10 cents for all you can eat for a ham and egg breakfast. And the chicken says, well, that's fine. I can make a contribution. But the hog says, I can't because I got to make a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So it really comes down to those things that you are willing to make a sacrifice toward. That to me is what kind of separates us from this idea of the corporation. And then, conversely, we end up with this idea that if we're going to do the right thing, it should not always be the right thing. To go back to Saeed's analogy of the football player, whether the football player is the old grizzled veteran or the young, enhanced, ergonomically trained, the goal is the same. The goal is to get the ball over the goal line. Mm. Has the goal changed now? As we play this new game, is the goal to please God as you see God to be, or is the goal to please yourself, or is the goal to have fun, or is the goal, you know, is community the place where I live, or is it the place where I type? And ultimately, I can have thousands of friends, but if I need $500 to pay the rent in my house, will that digital or cyber community come up with the $5,000 or the $500 more readily than my neighbors? Ah, I can do a GoFundMe page, but how long will that last? You know, it's like I've got to paint this picture of my need and my situation so vividly that strangers will say, okay, here. But, and that gets me past my crisis. But does that sustain me more than a community of people whom I love and who love me?
Mm. Well, you're also having to deal with how does free agency mess with the model when it comes to being able to sustain a common goal. If you've got this situation where you can just simply leave the franchise, and if you have that happening en masse with a bunch of different people, that's going to create multiple disruptions.
Well, I think we have discovered what we thought we might discover before we started this first podcast, and that is that we can continue for quite some time. but I hope that what we've done so far is to give those who will listen to us an idea of what we intend to explore. I think you can readily see from this whole discussion of corporate why one of the things we hear from young people these days is that they want to be spiritual but not religious. And I think by religious they mean that they don't want to be institutional. Mm. And we've certainly got a model of an institutional kind of way of being within church practice in a lot of aspects. So with that idea as kind of a last thought, I think that we can leave. Where would we go from here, Maddie?
I think we just thank our listeners. So thank you for listening in. This has been the Faith in Works podcast brought to you by the Interfaith Leadership Council of Detroit. To learn more about this organization and the podcast, please visit the Interfaith Leadership Council of Detroit Facebook page and let us know what more topics you would want to hear about, things that you want to hear, people you want to hear from, and thank you for listening.